Good evening, everybody. This is a meeting of Environment and Natural Resources Subcommittee on Forestry. And it's a little after 6 o'clock on Thursday, February 15th. Tonight, we're going to review Senate File 438, which is a department bill dealing with various things, and then Senate File 420, which is a firewood pest control regulation bill. I appreciate all of you on the committee and for agreeing to be on this committee. And Senator Dibble, I have to present these bills. Would you take the gavel?
I'd be honored.
He might as well come off here.
We got all the experts here. You sure you don't want to be here for firewood discussion?
Oh, yeah, we're going to dig in deep on that firewood discussion.
Okay. Do you want me up here?
Senator Saxhawk, to Senate File 438.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 438 is the DNR forestry bill for the 2007 session. This is a Senate file we will send to the full committee as the omnibus forestry bill. After some testimony with me today, in fact, is Deputy Forestry Director Bob Tomlinson. Is that correct?
That's correct.
After a discussion, I'll be moving that we lay this bill on the table for our next meeting, which will be next Wednesday at 6 o'clock. We'll lay this bill over and decide what other forestry provisions, if any, we'll be attaching. So I'm going to ask Director Tomlinson to go over this bill and answer any questions, or if you have any questions of me.
Right. Welcome, Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is, for the record, my name is Bob Tomlinson with the Division of Forestry and DNR. The bill basically before you is the DNR's Division of Forestry bill this year. It has three components to it. One is it reauthorizes the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. Two, which has a number of different provisions in there, by the way, which I'll mention in a second. Secondly, it creates a forest resource assessment product and services account, which is essentially an efficiency measure for us in how we manage our financial resources at our inventory shop up in Grand Rapids. And thirdly, it amends the chapter which deals with the requirements for decorative bough buyers and the way we assess fees and the amount of boughs that require a permit for that. It seems that Section 1, I see, is the professional services account. First off, let me mention that the fiscal impact of this particular section is zero. It's basically all we're doing is asking for the authority to manage the money that we get in for different services that we provide through the Forest Resources Assessment unit within the DNR Division of Forestry in a different way. The DNR Resource Assessment provides integral services to DNR PCA, Natural Resource Conservation Service, the U.S. Forest Service, Bowser, County Land Departments, and others as well. We have, if you haven't been there yet, it is a state-of-the-art, if you will, in the nation, resource assessment unit up in Senator Saxhawk's town of Grand Rapids up there. And all the newest technology and the newest and the best applications of that technology, probably just about anywhere in the United States here that we've got. The services they include survey design, data collection and compilation, creation of data layers and remote sensing and those sorts of things. And we do that basically on a fee-for-service basis. The dollars for the services are provided, and the creation of the products are for sale are funded up front from mixed sources of funding, and that creates budgeting difficulties during and over different fiscal years. So we feel that establishing the Forest Resource Assessments Products and Services account will eliminate the budgeting difficulties created from working with different funding sources and different distribution accounts, and it will also enable the resource assessment then to manage its financial operations within the parameters of the agency rules and regulations, while allowing it to efficiently manage its operations across fiscal years and biennium ending years and those sorts of things. So we hope, anyway, we're looking for your support on that particular component of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Chaudhry.
Where does the money go now?
Senator Chaudhry, the money is deposited into different revolving accounts, is my understanding, in the DNR Division of Forestry. It stays there, and it's for our use, but we can't spend the money. To answer your question, sir, it goes into accounts that's specified to come back to for that use. But we aren't able to use it across fiscal years and the likes, or mix the monies, as we'd like to be able to do in some cases.
Flexibility.
Yeah. Basically, the way that we're doing it right now, according to the way we operate it, it lacks the flexibility that folks need up there to be allow us to manage it in a more adaptive and better way.
So, Mr. Senator Chaudhry, follow. So, Mr. Tomlinson, if in fact, so where it goes now, it goes into these accounts. If in fact the folks up there, what is the name of this unit or this operation?
Forest Resource Assessment Unit.
So they collect a fee for their service, fee gets deposited somewhere, pretty much has to be used, that money has to be used that year, or there would need to be some sort of future appropriation from the legislature so that they could use that money at some point in the future. Is that right? Is that what you're telling us?
Mr. Chair, that's correct, is that it would have to be used and then there has to be an appropriation. But the other thing is that it's right now, you made the comment that it goes into a big account. It's actually a whole bunch of different small accounts that it might go into. So if we, for example, collect receipts from Bowser and doing some work for them, the money would go into there, and we don't have as much flexibility in using the money for some other purposes perhaps in the future, even though we've already given the service or the product that Bowser might be looking for in that whole thing. So the idea here is to have the one large account, which will provide us more flexibility in how we better manage that in the future.
Yeah. As I understand, it's probably consistent with the way the DNR operates in a lot of its other funds. It just creates a fund for this purpose. It's, I think, a unique feature of the DNR, these standing and open appropriations. The DNR kind of collects money and then puts it in a bank, and then they can do with whatever, and it's not subject to the kind of appropriation process that typically other agencies, by and large, as a matter of fact, you wouldn't find anything like that getting through the transportation committee, but I don't know, we just operate DNR differently for some reason. Mr. Knopf?
Mr. Chairman, these are kind of fee-for-service type accounts. A little bit different than where you're where you've got a fee that's established by law, like a pheasant stamp or something like this. These are actual a fee for service, and there's no way of knowing in advance how much money is going to come in on each of these accounts. And I was mentioning to you earlier, if you look at the first four sections of the bill, these are all the accounts it looks like that the money is going into right now, depending on what types of activities they do. And all of these accounts, I think, have statutory appropriations from them. It's just, as I understand it, the money gets mixed with money from other sources, and it's probably difficult to keep that separated. Whereas now you're going to have a separate account just for these activities, so you'll know exactly where the money came from and what it's going to be used for.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Right. Okay. Any questions on this section from the committee? Moving on.
Mr. Chair, how much money are we talking about in general? For example, last year,
Mr. Tomlinson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Chaudhry, I don't have that number right on with me right now, but I can certainly make sure we have that when it comes back to the committee.
That would be.
I presume the full committee.
actually.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I have that number.
By next Wednesday, perhaps, for the next subcommittee, we'll be taking this up again. We'll be taking this off the table, so why don't we have that by next Wednesday? Great. Thank you.
Section 6, I believe, is the next...
Five.
Excuse me, provision of the bill, which basically, which is found on page 3 of the bill, deals with balsam boughs.
We start with Mr. Tomlinson, section 5 on page 2.
I'm sorry, you're right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 5 and section 6 deal with the balsam bough provision that we're looking for in here. Current practice is that we charge a fee for balsam bough permits, and the permits are up to 100 pounds. We're proposing to change that down to 25 pounds per permit, and then assess a fee. And if I remember right, I think we took the, we removed the exact dollar amount, as you'll notice on page 8 in section 6 out, and we basically have in there that the commissioner shall charge a fee for the permit that covers the cost to allow us a little more flexibility in changing the fee from year to year, that sort of a thing. But we would have one fee, we want to emphasize. We don't plan on having, different fees in different parts of the state. Be one fee for the bowel permit, and it's just to cover the administrative cost and be able to change that fee in years to come as the administrative cost may go up or down otherwise. So,
Mr. Tomlinson, I'm reading here on your sheet that you only sell about 100 of these permits per year. I have two questions. One is, why do we issue a permit for this, and do all the people who should be buying a permit buy one? I just think about all the bows that are available for purchase around the holidays. I've got to believe more than 100 people are engaged in that business activity.
Well, it's good point, Mr. Chair. Members, this only applies, again, to state forest lands. So you have all kinds of additional permits that perhaps are sold on county lands and by the U.S. Forest Service, and perhaps, I don't suppose, private individuals give permits, although I suppose some of the bigger corporations like Potlatch Lands or Boise Lands and the likes like that could do permits as well. But for the DNR forestry lands, which is what this pertains to, we're only issuing about 100 permits a year. It's a rather small thing, but it's and the reason we issue the permit, by the way, is there's really a couple of things here. Several years ago, it was determined that we needed to take a better look at and a better approach to managing balsam bough harvesting, because there was a lot of concerns expressed that perhaps they weren't being harvested in a sustainable manner. For example, you can't cut off the terminal leader on a small balsam bough tree, and you want to take off the laterals and the lower down and that sort of a thing. And I don't understand. I'm not an expert on the whole thing, but that's just an example of one of the things that we wanted to impress upon folks. So with each permit comes a training session, if you will, where our foresters are expected to sit down with the permit holder and give them pretty clear instructions, both orally and in writing. I think we have some fact sheets that we hand out, if I'm not mistaken, that provide pretty clear instructions on how to harvest the boughs and how to do it sustainably. And then we just charge that nominal fee, and it really supports a very significant cottage industry, I guess you'd call it, up here in northern Minnesota.
Great. Thanks. That's helpful. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a question. Why 25 pounds versus 100? Why such a reduction?
Mr. Tomlinson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we felt that 25 pounds, our foresters are saying that a lot of the permits that we're issuing are probably closer to that anyways, and that is a fairly significant bundle of boughs, they thought, and so.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Tomlinson, I'm reading Section 5 and Section 6, and Section 5 applies to bows that are cut on private land also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah, I think Mr. Knopf and I noticed that at the same time, and there's nothing in the permit section that talks about DNR.
No, Mr. Chairman, as I read that, it pertains only to those who buy more than 25 pounds.
Mm-hmm. So that goes to my first question, Mr. Tomlinson. Is everyone who's supposed to be buying these permits actually doing so?
Does the first Section 5 require a permit? Requires?
Yeah, Section 5, I don't think... For the cutting or harvesting purposes, is there a permit required? That's one question. Secondly, for all the people who are buying 25 pounds or more, buying the buyer's permit that they need.
And Mr. Chairman, it's more restrictive than that. The written consent must be carried by every person cutting, harvesting, removing, possessing,
Christmas tree
or transporting any decorative materials or in any way aiding therein. It must be exhibited to any officer at the officer's request at any time.
Thank you for pointing that out. The fee, the $25 permit fee, applies to the DNR forestry lands, is my understanding. The permit to have boughs, to be harvesting them, it's kind of like the Christmas tree laws currently. If you want to harvest and transport Christmas trees, regardless if they're on state lands or private lands, you have to have some sort of a permit in hand as you're transporting those trees that basically shows proof of where they came from and that you paid for them and got them legally, that sort of a thing.
Is there more in the statute?
No.
Mr. Tom, maybe this is another project to look at in the intervening week, because Mr. Knopf tells us, Mr. Knopf, I don't think there is any more in the statute that clarifies Senator Frederickson's and my questions.
Mr. Chairman, members, no. It seems on the plain reading of this, the written consent, as Senator Frederickson pointed out, applies to all lands. And it does require that the consent form be on the person the entire time. In fact, it says it's prima facie evidence of basically getting them illegally, I think, if you don't have it on you. And then the permit, as the chairman pointed out, is the bow buyer and not the person who's collecting the bows. And so I'm not sure how that fits in. It seems like the $25 is paid by the bow buyer, and it doesn't seem to apply only to state lands. It looks like it applies to any land, if you read the statute literally.
All right. So maybe we need to sharpen up some pencils and come back next week with some either answers or fixes.
We will do that.
Great.
I apologize for not having all the information on that part of this.
Great.
Okay. Look at it.
Well, at least we're laying this bill on the table this week, so we have some time. Moving on, Mr. Tomlinson.
The last is Section 8, which is basically the repealer. Of course, it's just for the Sustainable Forest Resources Act. You've heard testimony from Dave Zimetta over here, I think, once or twice in the last couple of weeks. But the key components of that, of course, are the developing, implementing, and reviewing and revising the timber forest management guidelines, coordinating the development and implementation of landscape-level forest resource plans. There's a number of other things in there, including the partnership, interagency efforts, Senator, that just be removing the repealer would put that entity, if you will, in place permanently until the legislature decided to do something differently, if they ever did, future with it.
So we're repealing a repealer. Okay, I get it. Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Tomlinson, this is one way of accomplishing that. Another way would be to extend the sunset out another period of years, be it 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And the department's preference is just to repeal it? You know,
we feel that's a good question, and there was discussion around that. As a matter of fact, I believe there was some testimony here from one of the environmental groups a week or two ago that suggested that maybe the repealer ought to be just extended. That way, they're kind of the council is should come back in 5, 6, 7 years from now and justify their existence, if you will. Once again, we feel, the department does that, and the council members do as well, I might add, that they've been around 10 or so years now, and they've done a pretty good job, and we feel they continue to do a good job and are going to be necessary as long-term for forest management in Minnesota. And so I guess our preference would be to just repeal the repealer. The second choice might be the other way of just extending the repealer date out or the expiration date or sunset date out by several years. But we like the idea of repealing the repealer.
Okay. All right. Anything further from the committee on Senate File 438? All right, so Senator Saxhog, we will lay Senate File 438 on the table.
All right, Mr. Chair, I move we lay it on the Senate File 438 on the table.
All right, I think by so saying, it's laid on the table. Yep. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next, we have.
Go ahead to Senate File
420. And it too is a DNR bill, and it's for pest control regulations dealing with allowable firewood in state parks. We realize it may not be perfect in its current form. There's some concerns, and I think we probably ought to discuss some of those. And again, I'd like to look forward to laying this on the table for possible inclusion into Senate File 438. And again, Mr. Thompson from the DNR Forestry Division is here to answer some questions. Explain it and answer some questions.
Thank you, Senator Saxhog. Mr. Tomlinson to Senate File 420.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The proposed DNR firewood restrictions are one piece in a multi-agency effort to stem the flow of damaging invasive species into Minnesota, we feel. The Department of Agriculture, DNR, USDA, Forest Service, and the APHIS, Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, have all joined together to help address the issues that we face relative to invasive species. Along with our partners in neighboring states, they've jointly identified recreational firewood as the most immediate threat needing attention. This is not because firewood is the only pathway for these pests, but because it is the pathway least regulated, most likely to move the emerald ash borer, one insect with the potential to change Minnesota's forest landscapes forever. I have some other talking points that I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with that, but the bill itself basically, as it states here, would a person. And subdivision two there would be that a person may not possess firewood on lands administered by the commissioner unless the firewood has been approved by the Commissioner of Natural Resources or the Commissioner of Agriculture. And that the commissioner shall, by written order published in the state register, define firewood that is approved for possession, and that the definition is not subject to the rulemaking provisions of Section 14. In addition, we also ask that this legislation be effective immediately upon enactment because of the urgency of trying to get this in place as soon as possible. I believe that, the first big camping weekend will be Memorial Day weekend, and we'd like to have it well in advance of that, if possible, that we're prepared for it. I want to mention that I guess there is also a financial aspect of this. We have a $110,000 request for the biennium $55,000 per year request that would come to the Division of Forestry. We actually, I think Parks will probably use that money more than Forestry will, but we're working very closely with Parks and with Ecological Services and Enforcement and others in putting together the plan and how we'll manage this, this firewood restriction. And there's essentially three components to it. One is a strong education and communication program, which we have already begun. We don't, you know, we're not intending to wait for anything for that or wait for the dollars to come. We realize, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that even though the bill might be enacted upon passage, the $55,000 in funding would not be available until July 1st anyway. So we're already moving forward with the education communication plan. The second component relates to the potential confiscation and disposal. Thank you. The disposal of any firewood that might show up at the state parks or state forest campgrounds or otherwise. And then the third aspect of our plan is to assure that there is adequate sources of alternative firewood available for campers so that they, of course, can benefit from the camping fire, the fire experience that everybody likes to have when they go camping. So those last two things are really the aspects that we're working on right now. Not, I will readily admit that not all the details are on all of them, but we are working on them and continue to refine those things. If we go on.
Penalty or enforcement?
I think what I'd like, if you care, Susan Burks from Forestry staff is here, could speak a little bit to the education and communication component part of it, and John Lilly from the Assistant Director of Parks is here as well, that could speak a little bit more to the part about the collecting the firewood and disposing of it and providing alternative sources and that sort of a thing. So, would you care to? Senator Saxhog is asking about penalty and enforcing the law, that sort of a thing. I don't see, first off, I don't think we've discussed any penalty for people showing up. The penalty would be that we'd ask them to leave their firewood at the gate, and then our park managers would dispose of it.
Okay.
And the enforcement will be just that. It'll be largely a voluntary type of a thing, but I guess perhaps the parks and folks and others that have been involved in the more of the planning of this, so more can speak to that if you care. You want to? Would bring them up, or?
Well, what is the committee's pleasure at 6:30? I would be interested, actually. This is an issue of interest. If we can be brief, but I think there are some questions. I have an interest. I have a couple of questions, including a, kind of a macro question that we'll get to a little later. So I'm sure when we have folks come up for a few minutes. Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, while they're coming up, could I ask Mr. Knopf a different question?
Sure can, yes.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, if we do have this control on firewood put in place and somebody does bring, let's see, emerald ash borer into an area and an infestation develops, could they be liable? Could the person that brought the firewood in be held liable for the spread of the disease in the trees? Liable for the loss of the trees?
That's an interesting question, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson. I don't know that the law would be clear on whether, if you start a forest fire, we know we've got statutes that say you're liable for the costs. Mm-hmm. For something like this, I mean, if you look at, actually in Subdivision 1, it talks about when there's an infestation that occurs, and that the commissioner's authorized to enter upon lands within public or private within such zone and may enter in agreements. But it's not clear that the person would be now in a lawsuit, you know, anything goes there. I mean, it would be up to, you'd have to bring a lawsuit, I assume, against them. But there's no statutory reference that I'm aware of providing that person is held liable for that infestation.
But Mr. Chairman, Mr. Knopf, Subdivision 2 states a person may not possess firewood on land administered. Yeah. Would that establish some additional liability?
Mr. Knopf.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, that's a restriction in law that doesn't necessarily deal with liability. Liability would be decided kind of elsewhere. I mean, this is more of a prohibitive restriction. It could be used as a factor in determining whether that person is liable.
Okay. But Mr. Knopf, when you establish a prohibition in law and don't specifically call out exactly the level of within that statute, the level of offense, isn't there a default level of offense that rises to?
It's a good question, Mr. Chairman. And I actually looked in Chapter 89, and I think this would be the only kind of prohibition within Chapter 89 at the time. So there aren't any penalties prescribed in this chapter. What you do is you look to, there's a broad penalty, a broad section in Chapter 645, and it says a punishment for prohibited acts, at 645.241. When the performance of any act is prohibited by a statute and no penalty for the violation of the same shall be imposed in any statute, the doing of such act shall be a misdemeanor. So it's kind of the broad coverall when you don't have a penalty prescribed that it would be, and a misdemeanor, is my understanding, is 90 days or $1,000.
It's a criminal offense.
Criminal offense.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I just throw the question out there as far as a sanction. It doesn't appear that anybody wants to do any heavy fining or ticket writing here. Maybe something like, you know, not allowing the individual to camp, to be able to deny them access to the campground, something like that. Is that more reasonable or is that possible? I mean, you have to be able to turn them around and say, if you're not going to comply,
right.
You're going to have to leave. We're not going to give you a permit to stay here.
Sure. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, we do have other examples where only a warning is issued or that they'd have to give up the firewood or something like that. I mean, there are other examples of laws like that that the penalty prescribed is a warning. It could be a petty misdemeanor, which is a much smaller, not considered a criminal offense. There are other options for this.
Mr. Chair.
We have a week to work on it, Senator Ingebrigtsen. You have a week to work on it. Senator Saxhawk.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Knopf, so the point is that you should put something in this law. I mean, whether it's we're going to take it away at the door or we shouldn't probably leave it up to having nothing and then let that statute take over. Is that what you're saying?
Unless we want it to be a misdemeanor, a criminal offense, and, you know, a threat of 90 days in jail or $1,000 fine. It's pretty serious. Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, you answered the question very well. It basically, yes, if you don't want this the part in Chapter 645 to apply, it would make sense to have to put in place what you want to have happen. It's again, it's similar to, I think, the for those of you around when the phosphorus and fertilizer was around, that was, you know, done with a small fine. Basically, it was mostly as an educational effort, and so it's only a small fine for doing that.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Susan Burks. I am the Regional Forest Health Specialist, and I have been kind of chairing some of the internal working groups that have been working on this within the DNR and also representing the interagency group. I just wanted to give you a little bit of idea on the education efforts that are underway. There's an internal one within the DNR that represents all of the divisions that has already been initiated. They have we're going to be putting, you know, a pop-up message on the website, the reservation website. We're going to be putting out posters. We're going to be putting out some mailers. We also have an interagency one that is just starting, and that has the Department of Agriculture and the DNR, as well as the Forest Service and the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. And that one is also, you know, this is an example here. I can show you a little bit later if you want, that the Department of Agriculture is already marked up, and then they'll be printing at their expense, but it looks like we're going to be able to use it for our purposes as well. So this is kind of a cooperative effort between all of the agencies toward this kind of the issue on the firewood ban. So that is going to be our big primary emphasis, is the education around pulling this restrictions together.
Thank you. He'll come and grab those from you.
Okay.
Questions from the committee?
Good enough for everybody. But.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you. I guess maybe someone else maybe could answer this. How is firewood defined?
That has not yet been officially approved. We were planning on doing that within the state registry. We're still having some discussion. Right now, what we are proposing is that it would include firewood that is provided by the DNR, firewood that's been purchased from an approved vendor, or clean, unpainted, chemically untreated dimensional lumber.
Senator Schotter.
That is not necessarily provided or approved by the DNR.
Right, that would not necessarily have to be. That would be kind of just on the approved list. But otherwise, you know, regular raw firewood would have to be either from the DNR or an approved vendor, and that's what the current proposal is.
So the firewood, Mr. Chair, that you don't want to be brought in is from a tree, mm-hmm. a log.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is bringing in scrap lumber, that's okay.
Yes, Chairman and Senator, the scrap lumber, as long as it's been clean and treated, it does not have bark attached. It's been killed and dried. We're not worried about that moving the pests in. So it's raw wood that has not been treated or that has the bark attached that we're particularly concerned about.
I see. Okay. The other question I had, Mr. Chair, on a 1 to 10 scale,
green treated,
where does Dutch elm disease lie? And where is the emerald ash borer problem in terms of kind of tree devastation?
On a 1 to 10. Dutch elm disease, I would put somewhere in the middle, whereas I would put emerald ash borer up near the top. If you remember the chestnut blight that came out the turn of the century that basically eliminated chestnut from our overstory trees.
I apologize. I know I'm getting a little bald. But I do not remember that
okay.
era.
Well, most of us don't know what it looks like. We have pictures out there, but the pest eliminated it from our hardwood forests.
Under the spreading chestnut tree or something.
Right, yeah, right. Emerald ash borer is threatening to do that. The Dutch elm disease, Minneapolis had 60% of their elms survive the first outbreak through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. In Detroit, in that southeast part of Michigan, they've got 95-98% mortality. All ash, all species, all forest types, all size classes where ash occurs. So
I think though we're
It looks like it's going to be considerably worse than Dutch elm disease.
I think we're getting the last of the Dutch elm though in this recent round of Dutch elm disease. I'm pretty sure there's not going to be another old Dutch elm tree standing. I think we've pretty much taken care of that. Although this deep freeze, maybe we'll have a few more survive a couple more years.
Yeah.
Senator Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, I really didn't have a comment on, but I do think there is a scattered elm tree that survives this occasionally.
Mm-hmm. And this is potentially twice as worse.
Yep.
All right.
I had a couple more questions.
Oh, Senator Frederick.
On the website.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think it makes sense to have some sort of flashing red, kind of scrolling notice on the homepage of the DNR website? It seems like this is kind of the real portal to
mm-hmm.
really what everyone looks at. Mm-hmm. Whether you're making a reservation for a park or not, it seems like you ought to put it on the homepage.
Mm-hmm.
And have it at the top, scrolling along the top in bright red.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the please do not bring firewood from home, approved only.
Mm-hmm.
And then if and when this is passed into law, this is illegal now. And then something about, the emerald ash borer. The problem.
Right. Yeah, Chairman and Senator, that's a great idea. I'm not a information education specialist. We do have a number of them on our internal team, and they are looking at, the kinds of messages that we need to put up there. I'll be glad to take this back to them and talk about the possibility of doing that.
I really think it should be on the home
page.
Because it's just that important. Anyone going to the website, DNR should probably know about it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The other question was the call center is opening up in about 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
At least it's scheduled to start taking reservations for early summer. Are you looking at kind of a standard message that every call center rep can give to every person calling in?
Do you want to answer that, Bill?
Mr. Lilly. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is John Lilly, Assistant Director for State Parks. And in answer to your question, Senator Chaudhry, if we can just go back one question. Based on our conversation yesterday and the information that we dropped off in your office today, I have made some initial inquiries with regards to what we could do or what we can't do in terms of design changes to the homepage. And they're working on that right now. So we are maybe a half a step beyond what Susan spoke to there. But just to let the committee know, we are we're seeing what can be done in terms of a banner or something that makes it stand out. The your second question with regards to the call center, we have well over 4 million hits a year, and over half of those are online hits, and the remainder are call center. So we are, I believe we dropped off what was what we're looking at for purposes of the message in terms of the online PAPA. Now, the other piece with regards to the call center, that is being worked on through the communications group. We do not have the final context of that yet, but we can certainly provide that for the committee one.
That seems like an obvious one. To if they're calling the reservation center, they're going to go to a park. And how many people call the reservation center a year?
Well, out of we have 71,000 reservations per year. So you figure half of those or a little less are calling the centers.
I mean, that's going to help really spread the word.
Absolutely.
I think those two things are really critical to real critical informational tools. I think the flyers that you put up, these are nice too, but that online and the call center, those are real active ways that we can get the word out. And I think it should be done right away. So people are starting to make plans for the summer. They're going on the website. You know, people start knowing early and get used to this idea early, so it's not a shock.
We're working with the understanding that the website is going to be up next Wednesday on the 21st. So I think we shared that with you yesterday. So we're working with that date in mind.
Great. Thank you. Ms. Burks, did you have anything further?
No, if you have.
All right. Mr. Lilly, you had some information for us? Some more information?
If you have some questions, I guess our concern is that we have 67 state parks and recreation areas and another 46 forest recreation areas. So there's a number of sites where this is going to impact. And we certainly want to, as Bob and Susan have alluded to, make sure that we do everything we can from an education and communication standpoint on the front end rather than dealing with the prospective enforcement and what we do or don't do on the other end.
Thank you. Senator Chaudhry.
I think the legislative committees are kind of getting hip to this problem. I'm a little concerned about how the rest of the legislature is going to react. When you see this at first blush, you just say, oh, this looks like a real intrusion on a tradition, and it's an overreaction. What else can we do to get the legislature more well-informed that this is twice as bad as Dutch elm disease?
Mr. Lilly?
Well, I guess my thought off the top would be that the types of things that we're sharing with you yesterday and with the committee as we work through this, I don't see any better way than to make sure that all of those that might be involved in terms of the full committee are made aware through personal visits and the information that we're using to implement the program. If you or the committee have any thoughts.
Chairman, one thing I wanted to mention is that the planning committee that has been working on this issue had held a stakeholders meeting in December, and the plan is to have another four of them, you know, within the four regions of the state, you know, over the next several months. So that's one thing we're doing in addition to the education pieces that we're putting out. And we had pretty much all of the major agencies represented in a number of the private groups, tourism, hospitality, the trail riders, horse riders, campers associations, were represented. And we do basically the same thing at a regional level. So that may help.
So, yeah, Ms. Burks, are they able to help with the legislative effort, perhaps?
The people that are organizing those stakeholders?
The stakeholders themselves.
The stakeholders. Possibly. I'm not, you know, I don't know exactly how. We would have to talk about.
I think Senator Chaudhry is right. I think legislators are going to take a look at this and go, well, as Senator Vickerman responded in full committee, what, you're going to tell me I can't throw my wood in the back of my truck and, you know, go up to the campsite? You know, that'll be a surprise to people. It'll be... Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, to either of you, what percent of the campers do bring their own wood along?
We did a couple surveys, if you want to.
Go ahead.
Chairman and Senator, there have been two surveys done in the state, one by the DNR and one by the Department of Agriculture. Both of them estimated that about 50% of the campers came in, brought firewood with them. Approximately, 100,000 vehicles, so 50,000 of those that would have firewood with them, and an average of two bundles per vehicle. Obviously, a smaller, much smaller percentage of that is from out of state. You know, 10 to 15% of it's out of state, but we're potentially looking at 100,000 bundles of firewood coming in on a regular basis.
A lot of potential bugs and a lot of
food. Right.
It only takes one or two. Go ahead, Ms. Berkson.
I just, in part of the stakeholders meeting, the presentations that we've given, the point, and we maybe can get this across in some of our education, is that Minnesota is third in the nation for the volume of ash trees, second in the nation for the number of ash trees, and first in the nation for the susceptibility of mortality for ash. So this is, you know, financially, as far as the resource, it's going to be, you know, really a major impact. And all the stakeholders that were there at the meeting in December came in with the same approach. This is an overreaction. How come you're picking on firewood? And all of them came out saying, I don't like it, but we're glad you're doing it.
Senator Frederick.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Berkson, when you sell firewood now at state parks, do you make a profit on it? Do you sell it only at cost, or do you have a margin in the sale?
Mr. Lilly.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, we have that information. I don't have it with me tonight, and we can certainly provide the committee with that.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, my thought was that that we should, at least for a year or so, if we're making a margin on it now, sell it at the actual cost of the department of providing it, and not because there are going to be those cynics that are going to say, well, the state and Department of Natural Resources is going to make a profit on this.
Right. So that's an excellent thought. So I think the department should take that into consideration.
Mr. Chair, we could put that into this bill, too, somehow.
Yeah. Okay. Mark. We've got a week to work on it. We can take this off the table in a week. You got a week to work on your penalty.
What's that?
You got a week to work on your penalty.
Yeah.
I had a question about the effective date. Is there going to be enough time if we do this the day following final enactment? Of course, that's assuming that, you know, this thing slides right through and we get it passed early in the session. We time for the commissioner to do what he needs to do, this written order published in the state register, define firewood that is approved, et cetera.
Mr. Chairman and Senators, we are working on the draft protocols so that they, you know, would be potentially ready by the time that this was enacted, so that we could move fairly quickly. I think that the thing that would take the most time would be getting signage up at our unstaffed sites. The one would be somewhat difficult, but I think otherwise we can get the information out to the staff sites, you know, fairly quickly.
Okay, thanks. And then I had my more global question, and I see Department of Ag is on this poster that you're going to be putting up. So my question is, you know, this is similar to the question I had in full committee. That is, this is well and fine for a small part of the firewood picture. That's, you know, and that is within DNR's jurisdiction, of course, and that's firewood that's being brought to state park campgrounds, but what about all the other firewood? You know, people who are camping in other places and people who are using firewood in their residences, the firewood at the Super America. You know, what are we doing to get a handle on all that? Or what is Ag doing? Or what do you know about what Ag's doing? I mean, I know it's not your question to answer necessarily, but
Mr. Chair and Senators, I work with them very closely, so I can give you some idea. APHIS, which is the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, works us with all of the out-of-state exporters. So this is the big box stores and the convenience stores, the Walmart, you know, Home Depot and the like. The Department of Agriculture has been working with the in-state firewood dealers, getting them the same message. Nationally, this has become a pretty big issue. So there is both a tri-state organization looking at outreach and education, coming up with similar messages. There's also a 20-state Northeast area effort to come up with the similar messages to get that out. Part of the purpose of the stakeholders meeting is to enroll our other partners. The National Forest has already agreed to put an order in place that matches whatever it is that's enacted for the DNR. We'd like the counties to do the same kind of thing, and that's one of the things that we hope to accomplish with the stakeholders meeting.
So, thank you. Well, that'll help with the camping world, but, you know, then we have a whole other world of private use and residence. I mean, I just think we're probably going to have to change the entire dynamic and the entire structure and the way people think about firewood. Mm-hmm. Firewood just simply is going to have to be sourced locally, and firewood sellers are going to have to be licensed, and they're going to have to be subjected to some pretty stringent standards and inspections and that sort of thing. And I don't think we've even begun to grapple with that subject. Mm-hmm. Senator Chaudhry.
Yes, that's a good question. It sparked another question in my mind. How will a park employee know that a particular bundle of wood is approved?
What we are, Mr. Chairman and Senators, what we are proposing is that following the model that Wisconsin is using for their restrictions that are already in place, which is primarily kind of an honor system, that as they check in, they're asked if they have firewood. If they do, they're asked where they got it. If they have a receipt, that we can then check against the vendor list. A lot of the vendors don't carry receipts. They're self-service at the convenience store, so as long as they're on the list and the camper can name that, then we can pretty much say. Obviously, they could lie, you know, they can get in if they want to, but it's going to be an honor system, and we would then ask them to, you know, surrender their wood if it's not on that list or find another place to camp.
And then as a follow-up to that,
Senator Chaudhry,
there might be some firewood that is approved for that area, but then they buy it, you know, stop for gas before I leave. I get some approved firewood at the SA. And then I take it up north.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to deal with those situations?
Ms. Burks.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senators again. We really are still working out those details. We would like, because we really want to change public behavior and we want the wood to come from, you know, the 50-mile radius approximately of the facility that's being used, those that are approved would be within that 50-60-mile radius. So someone that is buying it, you know, in Minnesota but in the Twin Cities and then taking it up to Gooseberry would not, you know, we would be asked to surrender it at the Gooseberry facility. So that's, you know, right now what our thinking is at a proposal.
Well, I'm picturing roadside shacks that kind of line all the routes up to campsites, you know, kind of like we see the fireworks shacks and other places, you know, approve firewood, buy it here, you know, so people know that, I mean, you can see a whole new cottage industry popping up, huh?
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxhog.
And getting still more global. The whole idea of invasive species, you know, is the awareness that we need to get out to the public, that it's not just this with ash trees, it's in the water, and so people are aware that there's possibilities of all this happening. And I think the DNR has done a pretty good job, but that's I think what we're really thinking about here.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Senator Saxhog, anything further? Yeah,
Mr. Chair, this bill needs is going to have a few things done to it. A little information is going to be coming back. I'm sorry, Senator Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, if it's in order, I would move on line 9, delete such and insert and infected, and on line 14, delete such and insert the.
Okay, so sorry, I was looking at the wrong bill when you said that. So can you repeat that, Senator Saxhog? I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, on line 9, delete such and insert an infected. And on line 14, delete such and insert the.
Okay. Any questions on the amendment? Classic Senator Frederickson amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. All right. Senator Saxhog, so we'll be laying Senate File 420 on the table.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Chaudhry.
Senator Saxhog, on line 18, I think we need to consider something that talks about the treated lumber that we were talking about earlier. Firewood has been approved by Commissioner of Natural Resources or the Commissioner of Agriculture. But if we are also allowing some sort of treated lumber, we should figure out something to add there as well, or whatever the type of lumber you were talking about. I think we should write that in so it's clear.
Okay. For next Wednesday.
So rather than, excuse me,
Ms. Burke.
Please forgive me for the protocol. Mr. Chairman and Senators, so you're asking rather than putting it in the state registry, we go ahead and write it into the statute, what those definitions approved?
Well, both. Both, yeah.
As well as the definition, Mr. Chair, of the penalty, whether it's nothing more than just checking it at the door, so to speak. But.
Yes, I think there was a sense of the committee we wanted to work on that a little bit.
There was a number of things, but as I said, Mr. Chair, we will work on this bill a little bit more on next Wednesday, and if we're going to lay this on the table, if there's no other proceedings here, I have an announcement.
All right. So Senate File 420 is laid on the table, and Senator Saxhog, announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Prior to adjournment, our next meeting, that will be next Wednesday, that's the 21st, we'll be bringing up Senate File 91, 260, 420, as well as 438. And hopefully we can finish crafting a forestry bill and send it to full committee on that evening. If there may be other bills that will be taken up that night, too, forestry bills.
Thank you. Anything else from the committee? Nope. Anything from the audience? All right. We are adjourned.
On our far.